Hey everyone, if you make whiskey, please lend me your ears. The American Craft Spirits Association is once again teaming up with the Illinois Corn Marketing Board and related corn grower associations in another 21 states for the fourth biennial Heartland Whiskey Competition, which celebrates the cream of the crop, corn, the key ingredient for eligible entries into this competition. Visit AmericanCraftSpirits.org to learn more and register by June 16th to take advantage of early bird pricing.
First, I would say that old saying that if you love something, you never work a day in your life is a lie. If you love something, you work much harder and you work all hours of every day of your life. Just be prepared. You got to decide which path you want.
From the American Craft Spirits Association and Craft Spirits Magazine, this is the Craft Spirits Podcast. I'm John Page, and today on the program, we're joined by Bruce Tyler, the co-founder of Weldon Mills Distillery in Weldon, North Carolina. And he's also the vice president of the North Carolina Distillers Association. Bruce is a former active duty member of the U.S. Army Judge Advocate General's Corps who opened the distillery with his friend and business partner, Michael Hinderleiter, at the start of the pandemic in 2020. 1 year later, the distillery's corn whiskey named Rockfish claimed best in show at the Heartland Whiskey Competition. In this episode, Bruce discusses the surprise of that honor, the distillery's bourbon and other products, a second location in Durham, plans for a bed and breakfast near the distillery, an upcoming North Carolina Bourbon and Spirits Festival, and more. But to start, I asked Bruce to take me back to the moment when the distillery claimed best in show at the Heartland Whiskey Competition. And by the way, when Bruce talks about his master distiller, that's Mike Norman.
We had good fortune with our bourbons. We're a bourbon distillery first and foremost. And we were actually checking out the awards results. You know, this competition took place in the middle of bourbon country, right? We were ready to see these big results from our bourbons. And it turned out that Rockfish just blew up the competition, and we were thrown back by it, you know, because it's an old corn whiskey, you know, it's a 99.5% corn, a little bit of barley thrown in there. And we didn't have much expectations for it in the competition, but we were all pretty thrown back by it.
And so how many, do you remember how many spirits you entered?
Yes, I believe we entered our four bourbons and Rockfish whiskey.
Okay. And so like Rockfish was almost like an afterthought, basically.
Yes, it was actually. it was a whiskey competition held by corn growers. So we thought it would be fun to throw in a corn whiskey. You know, we didn't have much expectations for it, obviously, but we were definitely pleasantly surprised with the results.
And I mean, what more can you tell me about it? You know, do you sell a lot of it? Do you use it in cocktails, or what's kind of the story at the distillery with it?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we originally started the brand because we're in the rockfish capital of the world. Weldon is, you know, these rockfish are striped bass. They live up and down the eastern seaboard in the ocean. Then they come up river to spawn in the spring, and they spawn in our backyard, literally right in our backyard. So we had to create a rockfish whiskey. And, you know, our master distiller, he's an old moonshiner, so he wanted to do a corn whiskey, right? So we created this whiskey to be able to just have a regular standard corn whiskey and, you know, call it Rockfish and go with the whole theme of our area. And we didn't expect much out of it. And it actually has gained a lot of popularity. It's actually won some top medals in competitions since the Heartland Whiskey Competition. And it's actually gained a lot of popularity. Folks are buying the stuff in the ABC stores. It's one of the better sellers. We've got over 30 products and it's one of the better sellers. So, you know, I guess the consumers are kind of, they're kind of certifying what the judges' results were in that it's gaining in popularity. And we have a lot of folks coming to the distillery, both in Weldon and Durham, asking for the Rockfish whiskey. And we make a few cocktails, but a lot of our customers just like it. They sip it neat because it's an easy sipping whiskey.
And tell me what, you know, what to you made winning the Heartland Whiskey competition. I shouldn't say winning, but taking the best in show at Heartland Whiskey. Like, you know, what was special about that?
Well, you know, first of all, it's held by Craft Spirits Association. So, you know, I'm a craft spirits guy. You know, there's big mass production spirits out there. They're all super cool. You go to these big operations, but to me, the best spirits making is on the craft side. You can go to these little distilleries across America where folks are just honing in on some excellent products. And, you know, I kind of feel like we're at the beginning of the craft spirits phase, like the craft beer phase was, where you had a lot of big boys and girls. And then these craft shops started coming up and stepping up the game. I feel like we're there. And that's why I like the association a lot. It help, does a lot to help craft spirits. But this competition specifically, what's really cool and neat about this is held by the corn growing states. Okay. Corn, we're a big fan of, obviously, because it's the largest thing in our mash bill for our bourbons. And it's what's mostly in our mash bill for Rockfish. So these corn growing states, these associations, they have a competition. They hold this competition. And I think it's just neat to see these corn grower associations get involved on the spirit side, you know, because we are an agricultural commodity, you know, and a lot of folks don't put those two things together. But first and foremost, we're an agricultural commodity. You look at our farmer, you know, our corn farmer, for instance, he's not far from our mill building, which is the front of the house for our distillery. And it's an old 1892 mill building. That farmer, his farm's been in existence since before this was a country or a state. And that farm has been making corn and used to put corn through our old mill back in 1892 when it was in operation. But that farmer doesn't have to worry about whether or not he's going to sell his product. When he wakes up in the morning, he knows all of his products sold. He no longer has that stress, right? And the stress is, as we grow, he's got to be able to find ways to produce more. And that's a good stress, right?
Yeah.
So, but that's why I think it's neat. This is an agricultural commodity. You know, distilleries across America are keeping farmers employed. It is one of, you know, it's the first job in America that we had, right? Farming. So I think that little tie to the corn growers associations, I just think it's a special competition. And I feel like each of these states should hold pride in this competition. In fact, they should create an internal award for themselves, and whoever wins it gets to hold it for 2 years and rotate it around and pump it up, in my opinion. So,
yeah. Are you at that farm, are you doing anything with different corn varieties and playing around with things in your bourbon?
I would like to say that we're super fancy and we do all this crazy stuff, but the reality is my master distiller is an old moonshiner. He grew up in the mountains, Franklin, North Carolina, in the mountains, North Carolina, making moonshine and racing dirt track. His position is, and I agree with him, the best corn to use is the first corn they used to use. Not any of this non-GMO stuff, just good old yellow dent corn. And that's what we use, is yellow dent corn. And, you know, that's what most of these farmers are making. So they don't have to do anything special for our corn. The hardest thing that our farmer has to do for our corn is clean it up, because usually yellow dent corn is going towards feed for animals or something like that. But when it comes to whiskey making and bourbon making, we feel yellow dent corn is the way to go. There's a lot of folks out there doing stuff with Bloody Butcher and all this stuff. And, you know, not to knock any of them, because they're all cool and special in their own way, but we just roll with the yellow dent.
Okay, perfect. And tell me a little bit more about, you know, a few of your other products. You know, maybe what's the flagship? And then what are, like, you know, you mentioned 30, so I don't want you to have to to talk about each one of them, but you know, what are the three or four that you're most excited about?
Yeah. Generally we're a bourbon distillery first and foremost, and our bourbons, you know, we're corn, malted wheat, and malted barley. All the wheat, all the barley's malted. We lean more towards a wheated recipe, and our bourbons, they've done very, very well in competitions. They've won us Distillery of the Year 3 years in a row in different competitions. And time and time again, have taken Best Spirit, Best Bourbon, Bourbon of the Year, Spirit of the Year. They do really well for us. They are a small batch craft bourbon. We remove all the acetone prior to producing a drop of alcohol, so you don't have that nail polish remover smell or taste in them. And we have a special bourbon called the All Malt Bourbon, where not only the wheat and the barley are malted, but the corn's malted as well, which is unique. It's kind of like if, bourbon and scotch got married, this would be its child. I tried to clean that up for you a little bit.
Okay.
But it's a really neat, deep, earthy notes of hay, leather, and tobacco, followed with that sweet bourbon finish. Really cool product. Then we have some vodkas, some gins, some whiskeys, flavored whiskeys, and we just brought on tequilas into the lineup. And our tequilas, we partnered with one of the last family-owned distilleries in Mexico who make everything on small batch, and they do it kind of the way we do our bourbon with two distillations. So we had a lot of when we met and evaluated each other, there was a lot of pride in that our operations were done kind of in the same way. So we were happy to partner with them. So we've got some 100% agave tequila at 90 proof, not 80, because we like our alcohol higher proof here, but some incredible products on that Ray Coyote line. And then we have a Sabrosa tequila line that's a base Blanco plus three flavors, which is neat. We've got RTDs coming out, so we'll have a tequila RTD, a couple of those, and a couple of vodka RTDs ready to drink cocktails in a can. And we're just trying to have a full lineup. We've got some rum coming, and maybe, eventually we'll look towards the Sotol or some other specialty product. But we just like to have fun and keep it interesting here.
Yeah. And so I want to hear more about, your backstory and, what you were doing before you founded a distillery, and how you and your co-founder, Michael, brought this to the world.
Absolutely. Yeah. At 18, I enlisted in the Army and, I spent 27 years in the Army, started off as enlisted soldier in the combat arms, 82nd Airborne Division, jumping out of planes with a missile strapped to my side. Not the smartest thing in the world, but it was fun at the time. My body hurts now from it. And then, went to school, for undergrad and then grad school and business and then law school. During school, I was in the reserves as a MP officer. I got commissioned as a military police officer and then came back on active duty as a JAG officer. And then left active duty. I wasn't quite ready to retire at that point, so I went over to the North Carolina National Guard and took over as the head defense attorney in the North Carolina National Guard. Opened up a law practice and, was litigating, representing soldiers and criminal civil actions and whatnot, and just hated it. drank a lot of booze. It was fun being the JAG in the Army, where it's like, hey, blow this up or not blow this up, or hey, let's go out and build the local national capacity for rule of law and do all these combat operations. But when you're just grinding out in the courtroom day after day, not so much. A lot of booze, right? Had to drink a lot of booze. So, and Michael, my partner, he started off in high school in his parents' garage, opening up a business, and he's opened one after the next. And he's just an assassin in the business world. He's self-made, has crushed it. So we've always talked about doing something together. When I retire and get out of the military, let's find out something in business. And we just could never quite figure it out, right? We're like, oh, what about this? Nah, it's not going to work. And then sitting on my back porch one day, smoking a cigar and drinking bourbon, I was like, oh, there it is. It hit me. Why did I think of this earlier? So I texted him. I said, hey, man, you want to make booze? And then his response was yes. So from there, we had to go figure out how to do that because neither one of us knew.
You know, I'm One of the things, like one of the themes that just kind of echoes throughout these conversations that I have with distillers is, when you're starting out, you know, talk to a lawyer, find a good lawyer. Did you have to go out and find like other lawyers to talk to, or did your law background help? I realize that it's a very different field, but I'm wondering, you know, how much your background did help versus having to seek other help.
Yeah. So I left the law field for the booze industry thinking I wasn't going to have to practice law. Right. And it turns out that I still practice a lot of law. It's all statutory, administrative law, and regulatory law. And it's a lot of reading. You know, my background as a lawyer helped me process, understand the law, read it, interpret it, find out how it's actually applied to each situation, because, you know, just because the law says one thing doesn't mean that it's applied that way. And so it saved us a lot of money on legal fees, because really all we had to do was get somebody retired from TTB to help us with the application process. And from there, I've handled all of the legal aspects pretty much since. And you know, it's brutal. I definitely recommend anybody wanting to get in this business, if they're not an attorney, they definitely need to talk to one super quick, because you can get yourself in trouble really fast. And you just want to make sure you're doing the things the right way, because, you know, we spend a lot of money, time, effort, blood, sweat, and tears into building this business. And one little move can really take that all away from you. And one wrong turn, and next thing you know, all the efforts that you took are no longer, you know, they're gone.
Yeah.
So I definitely recommend folks reach out, speak to an attorney early and often.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, I guess, not necessarily wrong turns, but, you know, crazy turns that the world takes, you all opened during the pandemic, right? So were you planning, did you have a set date and then the pandemic comes along? What was your story there?
Yeah, so we found our locations that we wanted to set the operation up in Weldon. Beautiful mill right on the riverfront. There's a park that separates our two buildings. The other building's a 34,000 square foot warehouse, perfect for the distillery, for the production area. And this was early in 2019, right? We closed on those properties January 19. And back then it was taking a year plus for DSPs to get approved, right, at TTB. So we went full throttle, started rehabbing the mill building, right, to make it a viable business and presentable, because, you know, it is a historic mill building that needed some work. We went through that, and there was five of us just working on that thing. And we got that bad boy opened up at the end of April. Starting February 15th was our first day. So we crushed it. You know, we were going all in, rehabbing that building, opened it up as a bar and grill first to build interest for the DSP coming. And meanwhile, we shifted our focus from the bar and grill mill building over to the distillery area, so started rehabbing that. And then
so April of 2019 that you opened the bar.
Correct. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, gotcha. So in 4 months, less than 4 months, we banged that out really, okay, super fast with five, yeah, of us. And then we pivoted to the distillery building and got that thing up to speed. And we got our DSP in November of 19, okay, and started producing. Everybody was so excited, right? We were like, yes, finally, we got our DSP after all this money thrown into it and everything else. And we were producing bourbon, and we started on our other spirits, you know, so that we can make some money while our bourbon's sitting in barrels. And so, you know, the distills were running wide open, and then boom, COVID hit. And yeah, that was a significant emotional event for us. You know, after all this investment, time, energy, and effort, the state got shut down, like many states across the nation. And we just kind of went into a panic mode. So, you know, they didn't teach us in business school. just my partner and I said, all right, well, we're going to do the smart thing, probably not a smart thing, just spend our way through it, right? So that's what we did. We pushed, we increased production. We just said, all right, you know, eventually this is going to pass and we need to be ready for it when it does. So we started working towards increasing production, getting all of our products straight, and Harvest Host program, which is an RV program, which I recommend distilleries out there look at doing. They saved our butts in COVID because that's what our income pretty much was Harvest Hosters coming and staying with us and having some cocktails and buying bottles of liquor. And until the state let up on those restrictions, they were a large aspect of our business. The other thing with my military background, I automatically went into, okay, this seems like biological warfare, right? Yeah. With COVID, that was in my mindset. So I was like, we got to get in the fight, right? We got to do what we can do to help out, because our area, it's a underserviced, underprivileged area. You know, it's just, there's not a lot of money there. It's changing, but those five counties surrounding us, you know, there people were charging like $300 a gallon of sanitizer at the time. So we actually stopped our bourbon production and took our distillate and turned it into hand sanitizer. We couldn't get an MGP account or anything because we were nothing back then. And, you know, people were buying tankers and turning them into hand sanitizer and making all kinds of money. You know, maybe if we would have bought a tanker, they would have let us on, and that would have been the smart business move. But, you know, I didn't think that was the right thing to do. So we turned our distillate into a hand sanitizer, and we donated it to the five counties surrounding us because they couldn't get anything. And I felt that was the right thing to do. And so we did it and gave it all away. And what was awesome was you had, you know, troopers and sheriffs and police officers that had our bourbon hand sanitizers, we called it. And, you know, they would come up and say, no, officer, I wasn't drinking. I was sanitizing, you know, because it smelled like bourbon mash, you know, like bourbon distillate. So that was neat. So we did that. And then finally we came out of the back end and we came out strong because we entered our products into a lot of competitions thinking, huh, you know, let's see, maybe we'll get an honorable mention. And, holy smokes, we started winning top medals in these major competitions. And we're like, man, do we have something here that we might? And so we did more. We're like, all right, let's see what this next one. And then it just kept rolling. And from there, our distillery, when we came out of COVID, really started picking up steam. And, you know, we're right 2 miles off of I-95, right at the busiest exit in North Carolina on I-95, because it's right between New York and Florida. So we started getting a lot of traffic off the road, and we've been rock and rolling ever since, just growing our portfolio, growing our business, doubling production, you know, so it's been wild.
And had you released a spirit prior to COVID?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
So our hand sanitizer got released before any spirit did.
Yeah. So for a lot of people, the first thing they ever knew about Weldon Mills was that it was like a hand sanitizer, not a.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. That's exactly right. And we had a bar with live music every weekend that went away.
Yeah. Right. You know, so. When did you start to feel like, okay, things are kind of back to normal, or.
Yeah, I'd say 2021 was the turnaround, or the beginning phases of the turnaround, because, you know, we went back and forth. We went restrictions all the way up until they got released in early 2021, back and forth. Here's some restrictions, there's some restrictions. So, but I feel like our first year that, you know, really started kicking off was 2022, when everybody was just done, right? They were done with everything. You know, because 2021, people were like, should I wear a mask? Should I not wear a mask? Should I go out in front of people? Should I not go out in front of people? You know, all individual choices, not saying one's, you know, better than the other or anybody smarter than anybody, just individual choices. But 2022 was the first time that I felt real normalcy. And it showed, because people wanted to get out. They wanted to do things. They wanted to come tour. They wanted to drink. They wanted to socialize. And I feel like we're back. You know, 2022 was the first year that we're back, and that's from my neck of the woods. That's what I saw.
Yeah. So, you know, you were kind of talking about location a minute ago, and you folks are about like an hour and a half from Durham. Is that right? Or a little under 2 hours?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, you know, could depend on how fast you drive, less than an hour and a half. So,
okay, sure. Well, and so tell me about why there's a location in Durham now. So why did you all decide on Durham, and what is that experience like?
Yeah, absolutely. So my partner found this really cool historic building right downtown in the heart of downtown Durham, where all new construction is going for housing. It's just completely turning around. I don't know if you know anything about Durham, but Durham has been just this great success story of changing a downtown that was not used much and buildings were in disrepair and there wasn't a lot of things going on, to now it's become this vibrant downtown scene. So we wanted to get involved there. We thought it was a great fit. I did law school in Durham, so I was familiar with Durham and the changes that were going on. My partner lived downtown Durham, so we wanted to grab that building and turn it into a distillery. Plus, it's 3 blocks from Durham Bulls ballpark, 2 blocks from DPAC. It just felt like a great spot for it. So we do. So we decided to go ahead and open up a small production facility, no distillation out there. I don't want to put an explosion bomb. You know, I don't want to put a bomb in the middle of downtown Durham, right? So we'll distill it. We distill over in Weldon, and then we send it over to Durham for them to finish up, you know, production on that, you know, adding this, that, or the other to it and getting it bottled. But then we have a nice little speakeasy atmosphere in this 6,000 square foot bar, right, with some good high-end bar food, right? It's not a full meal or anything like that. It's just some really good small plates. So you don't have to leave if you don't want to. If you want to stay and have cocktails and hang out, you can grab a couple small plates and you're good. We do some live entertainment there. We also have a courtyard, an outdoor courtyard right there. That's about 5,000 square feet. So a nice, good size outdoor courtyard in downtown Durham. And we've partnered with the Durham Bulls. So we're the official spirit of the Durham Bulls, and which is neat because we're going to be releasing the Snorting Bull Bourbon for them here shortly, as soon as it's ready. My partner asks me every week when it's going to be ready. And I keep telling him, it's ready when it's ready, brother. There's no speeding up that process.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a great location. It's a great expansion of our brand. You know, we've got a lot of things going on with Durham, but also back in Weldon. You know, we purchased a historic mansion, and we're in the process of rehabbing that. Big long walk with the tax. You know, the historic stuff takes a long time, and so the GM should get started with that shortly. That'll be a bed and breakfast, a true B&B right across the street from the distillery area. There's a boardwalk that's going to be constructed. I think that gets started this year, right along our riverfront in our backyard at our mill building. And that'll run all the way downriver to our distillery building too. So that whole boardwalk plan is that whole riverfront. So, attached to that boardwalk, we're going to put some tree houses up. So you can rent right on the river, right at the little rapids there. And there'll also be a 90x90 covered platform where we could do events, weddings, concerts right on the river. You know, we'll probably put a little cantina attached to that so that you can have some food and cocktails out there. So we're just having fun with all the changes and, you know, trying to get out of the COVID mentality and get back to the, all right, life's okay mentality. So let's go forward and give people stuff to do. So.
Would the treehouse be just like a cool thing somebody can hang out in, or like a place you can stay in, like stay the night?
Yeah, so there'll be rental units that you can stay the night in. And way we envision it is we're going to put them up on platforms because, you know, that whole river can flood. So that's the whole reason why we need a boardwalk as well, right? It's got to be elevated. So you could eventually be staying right over water. Now, it's not like Tahiti or anything like that. It's river water, right? But staying right over water when the river's up. But it's going to be, you know, modified containers, probably self-contained electric, sewer, water, all of that stuff. So it's, you know, they're gonna be nice. You know, you can look right out the river, have a nice glass front to it, to where you've got a view of the river, and you know, you can get drunk and then just stumble your way back to the shore.
Yeah,
and you're good.
And how many rooms at the B&B are you planning?
So the B&B, we're looking at roughly 8 rooms there, and then between 6 and 10 tree houses along the riverfront. So right around 8 rooms at the B&B and 6 to 10 on the river.
And was the B&B, the tree houses, was this all part of the plan from the beginning, or was this and even was Durham part of a plan from the beginning, or did all this just snowball?
None of these were part of the plan. no, we just, you know, opportunities presented themselves. And so we went ahead and decided to capitalize on these opportunities. Hopefully capitalize on these opportunities. We'll see. you know, so we saw that opportunity and took it. You know, I don't want to sit back. I don't like sitting back regretting not acting on opportunities. So if it's there, let's try it. Let's see if we can, you know, do well with it. If not, hey, that's a lesson.
Awesome.
My partner would say that my lessons get really expensive sometimes.
Well, you gotta spend money to make money, right?
That's right. I tell them that every day.
Yeah. And I know there's also another exciting thing coming up, right? A North Carolina Bourbon Festival.
Yes. So we're going to be doing a North Carolina Bourbon and Spirits Festival. And that's going to be 30 September. We are finalizing the talent right now for it. So it's going to be basically an all-day concert. And we hope to have at least 30 North Carolina distilleries participating in it. So not just bourbon, but spirits too, because North Carolina, you know, a lot of folks don't realize this, but North Carolina used to be the distilled spirits capital of the world. Prior to Prohibition, North Carolina was cranking out more booze than anywhere else in the world and used to ship it on railhead all across the U.S., ship it overseas. And it was the industry in North Carolina, the largest industry in North Carolina. So many people were employed with it. Then, you know, prohibitionists wanted to cut the head off the snake. So they attacked North Carolina first. 12 years prior to prohibition, or 12 years prior to any other state in the union, North Carolina went into prohibition. And what was legal one day and everybody was employed in it was illegal the next. So people took to the mountains, to the woods, to the swamps, and started making their spirits on their farms and everywhere else. And then, you know, moonshine came from that dirt track, which eventually led to NASCAR. Now we want to highlight the North Carolina spirit lives on, you know, pun intended, right? Right. So the spirit lives on. And that's what we want to highlight is North Carolina. We've got over 90 distilleries in North Carolina. So we're one of the tops in the nations for number of distilleries. And it's a relatively new industry. I'm the vice president of the Distillers Association. So we want to highlight what all these distilleries are doing, how they're learning, how they're changing. Our organization has been responsible for lobbying and getting all these laws changed to make it take North Carolina out of prohibition and make it a friendly environment for distilleries to open up and thrive. So really, there's only been about 5 years that it has been, legislatively friendly environment for distilleries to get started in. So a lot of folks are learning, you know, some folks are like me and got lucky. We got a moonshiner, you know. Those lessons got passed down from generation to generation to generation. Those recipes, the knowledge of spirit making, that craft, that skill, that artisanship got passed down from generation to generation. We snatched one of those up, right? But some folks were, you know, starting off trying to figure things out, and they're doing great. Like North Carolina spirits are coming up, and we want this festival to be a highlight of that. We want to highlight just the variety. I mean, we've got the Krupness, that honey liqueur. We've got one of those Brother Vigales. They make that Krupness honey liqueur, which is awesome. We've even got someone making amaretto, the best amaretto I've ever had, you know, and I just want to get all of these folks out there that are doing crazy stuff. We've even got someone making grappa. I found that out the other day. I'm like, wow. the diversity of spirits here in North Carolina is phenomenal. There's a revival happening. This spirit festival is going to highlight that. Plus, we're going to get some decent sized name. It's going to be country and Western music, right? We're going to get some decent sized name country singers. I know we've got three that we're working on snatching up, and then we'll have some local acts in there. It'll be an all day concert, all day spirits, bourbon and spirits festival. I think we're going to even get a bull rider in there, right? So I think we're going to get a mechanical bull, maybe some axe throwing, you know. We'll make sure that they're contracted out with insurance, make sure nobody's too drunk to be throwing axes. But, you know, it should be a great event, should be fun. We've got tons of hotels right 2 miles away. We'll have a parking lot set up with a shuttle so people can get shuttled out. And, you know, some people, if they don't book early at their hotels, they might have to stay in Rocky Mount or up in Emporia. But we should have plenty of hotel rooms in the area if they book it soon. These hotels usually stay at capacity because it's the busiest exit on 95. So once these tickets get released, book your hotel rooms, book your tickets, get it all snatched up fast, because we hope to have up to 10,000 people at this event. So
what I was going to ask, where will people be able to get tickets, learn about it and all that kind of good stuff?
Yeah. So if you just keep watching us on Facebook and on our website, we will put out the website to go purchase tickets, and all information is forthcoming. We, you know, we're still finalizing everything right now. So once we have the names locked in, that webpage will go up, those tickets will go on sale. And again, if they just keep watching our Facebook, or if they want to get put on a list, all they need to do is just go to our website, contact us page, and say, hey, put me on the list for the Bourbon and Spirits Festival. And then we can send out notifications. It should be a really, really awesome event. I look forward to it. I'm going to have a lot of fun. I know everybody else is. So.
It sounds like a great time. I mean, it sounds like you've got a really, really awesome thing going, and the future is super bright. I'd love to hear your advice to someone that is sitting on their back porch and maybe they've just had that aha moment that I could do this too. You know, to the person who's thinking about starting up a distillery, what do you say?
First, I would say that old saying that if you love something, you never work a day in your life is a lie. If you love something, you work much harder and you work all hours of every day of your life. Just be prepared. You got to decide which path you want. You can take the slow organic growth and budget out and say, hey, I'm going to make this much and I'm going to sell this much. And after I sell this much, I'm going to take those and reinvest and reinvest and reinvest and do slow, methodical growth. Or you can do fast, rapid growth. I'll warn you, fast, rapid growth is very, very, very expensive, and it gets real crazy real fast. We started off with the mindset of slow growth. And I think it was COVID that just, you know, changed that mindset for us and said, all right, let's just go full throttle. So my recommendation is, one, get a lawyer. Two, make sure that you have your funds laid out, that you can understand exactly what you're getting into. Do your research. Just because stills cost so much, and other large pieces of equipment cost so much, all those tiny little parts, those, you know, those butterfly clamps, those hoses, everything you need, just some of the little glassware that you need for proofing and all of that, they get real expensive really fast. So I recommend, you know, buy the cheapest equipment you can. Start off small if you want slow growth. If you want to go big, you know, sky's the limit. As much money as you want to spend, there's opportunities out there for you. But understand that I don't care if you make the best liquor in the world, it's not going to move until people know about it. And one of the hardest things to do is getting people to know about it. And even when they know about it, they still might not go to it unless you provide an opportunity to put liquor in lips. So just understand that after you get everything set up, you get your DSP, you get stuff made, the work really begins, because you're going to be on the road nonstop trying to pump up your brand. And if you're not trying to get out in ABC stores or liquor stores and you're just trying to sell it out of your distillery, you're going to be on the road trying to let people know that your distillery is there, or else you're not going to have them coming in the door. So just be ready. Take whatever expenses you think they're going to be and quadruple them.
That's our program for today. Thanks again to Bruce Tyler for joining us. You can learn more about Weldon Mills at weldonmills.com. And remember, if you make whiskey, visit americancraftspirits.org to register for the Heartland Whiskey Competition. We'll be back soon. Until then, thanks for listening, and cheers.